And welcome back to another episode of Peek Behind the Curtain. My name is Vince Carone, a comedian based out of Chicago, performing since 2001, bringing you the behind-the-scenes look at my stand-up comedy career. Go follow me on all forms of social media at Vince Carone. Buy my albums, watch my videos, laugh your ass off. It's good shit. We're going to dive into this week's episode, The Club Owned by the Mob. Let's get into it.
My goals in my life are to be a good father. To be, fuck you.
Get loud, right past his own, Ben Carone!
So the reason I'm single.
Yeah, we know that.
Yeah, because your wife stopped fucking me for free.
You guys ready to see your headline tonight?
And shouldn't you guys be like the exhibits at a pro-choice rally or something?
Welcome to the stage, the very funny Vince Carone!
And thanks for coming back and checking me out for another week. My name is Vince Carone. This episode is called The Club Owned by the Mob. It's a club that was around in the Milwaukee area that I first performed in back in 2005. Performed there for probably about 7 or 8 years before it changed ownership and it's no longer around. And there's a story behind why I say it's owned by the mob. It really wasn't, but there's a fun story behind it. First, let's do a little cleanup on this past week. What have I been up to? This past week, Wednesday, Black Wednesday, right before Thanksgiving, I jetted on down to Bethany, Illinois. And if you're going, where the fuck is that? Believe me, I was doing the same thing in my car. Bethany, Illinois is a town of probably about 1,100 people or so. And they have a once-a-year show at a bar out there. And there's some real good ownership there. And they're running their own bar, building their own place, expanding the entertainment. And I was fortunate enough to be asked to be the comedian to go down there. And we had a sold-out show. And it was a lot of fun. And I got to run my my hour for my upcoming album, Vincectomy, which I'm recording 1 week from today on Thursday, December 12th. I had a fun Thanksgiving with the family. Nothing more to be said there. On Friday, I went to a show. I did a show in Arlington Heights, Illinois, at a place called Hey Nani. And it's a bar, and they have like an acoustic music venue next door. And they wanted to test comedy for the first time. So a very funny comedian named Paul Farivar, who will be emceeing my album recording on December 12th at Zany's in Rosemont, he put on the show, and he ran a great show. And he invited me to be a part of it. And they started the show at 10:30 at night, and which is a little odd, but they sold a ton of tickets, and it was such a fun show. But it was a test run to see how the comedy went there, and it was myself, Katie Miners, it was Paul Farivar, and we just had such a fun time, such a fun show there, and it was a blast, and. And then my aunt and uncle bought tickets for the show. And about 9 o'clock that night, I got a text message from my aunt saying, "Hey, Vince, where are you?" And I said, "Well, I'll be on my way in about a half hour." And she said, "Oh, okay." And then I got a text message about a half hour later. And she was like, "Hey, Vince, we didn't realize that your show actually started so late. We're not going to be able to make it after all. We're tired. We're old. We're going to head home." And so it's just kind of funny because there was two empty seats right up front, and it was just because my family didn't make it. But and also on that show was Mallory Bradford, super funny, and just a great show top to bottom. And then on Saturday I did a show in Bolingbrook called at CG's Comedy Club. Now I headlined there back in September, and the owner Glenn gave me a shout and said he was putting on a comedy all-star weekend for the Thanksgiving week. And he wanted to get a bunch of headliners in and have them all do 30 minutes each. So myself, Jim Flanagan, and Warren B. Hall all co-triple headlined the Saturday night 8 o'clock and 10:30 shows. And we had a great show Saturday. The early show, I ran my the first half hour of my new album, and it killed, did awesome. And then the late show Saturday was quite polar opposite for me. I was struggling and sweating up there, but muscled my way through. This week, I'm hitting a bunch of open mics. And last night I attended the annual Suburban Comedy Awards called the Burbies. And this is an award show created by a couple of suburban comedians to basically get together with all of your suburban comedy friends, but also take a moment to step out of the scene to praise the scene and talk about all the good the scene has done for all of us comics over the years. And they started this years ago, and they have a voting ceremony. You're recognized by your peers for either best digital content or best social media, best showcase, best open mic, best comedian, best joke, best bit, and a variety of categories. And they give out trophies and have an awards ceremony every year. And this year I was humbled and fortunate enough to be nominated for best comedian of the year from my peers. And I took home the award last night. So super cool situation for me. You know, when you do comedy and you travel around the country and you perform for, you know, thousands and thousands of people every single year, it feels great. It feels awesome to be able to earn those laughs and have that respect from audience members. But one thing you always want as a comic, and probably in a lot of facets of life at your jobs, is the respect of your peers. And to have that and have that honored last night meant the world to me. So thank you guys for that. So really appreciate it. Other than that, the next week here, I'm just getting ready. I've got my album recording. I'm excited for it. I'm really excited to actually record this so I can move on to new material that I've had just kind of waiting in the wings. I won't do the new material too often until I can record. I like to stay disciplined, get the recording in, get it done, and then move on right away and start the writing process for my next album. And I think so far in advance is to start kicking around titles for the album. So a couple that I'm playing with already are, Burden of Proof is one that I'm thinking about for the next one, and Beyond a Reasonable Doubt. So I'm kind of sticking in that theme, and I'll explain why next week after I record on the next podcast. I'll explain why I'm thinking those themes. But let's get into this week's topic here, the club owned by the mob. Okay, and this was a place in Milwaukee, Wisconsin called the Comedy Cafe. Now, the Comedy Cafe was not owned by the mob. It was owned by a gentleman named JD. It was called JD's Comedy Cafe, and he had a wrecking crew over there of some of the coolest dudes I've ever met working for him. But I'll explain where the title of this episode comes from. So, but first, let's get some backstory here. The reason the Comedy Cafe was it was the place to be in the early 2000s, probably late 90s as well. But when I first started comedy, I started getting into it in 2001, 2002. The Comedy Cafe, I was told, was the place you had to go, and I was lucky enough to get a guest spot there in a showcase to audition there in October of 2005. And I'll tell that story in a minute. But here's what actually made this place so successful. So not in this order, but a variety of things. So this club had a deal with a bar in downtown Milwaukee called Victor's, and they set it up to where a bus would come to Victor's every Thursday, Friday, and Saturday and pick up a group of people who were drinking and eating at Victor's, bus them over to the comedy club, and then come back and bus them from the comedy club back to Victor's after the show was over. And it was one of the smartest things I've ever seen done by a club, because it removed that transportation. It took away one of the excuses on why somebody might not come out to the show, and they overcame that, and they just jam fucking packed this house every single night. A couple of the other success factors, they were stringent on time. Okay, so if you were told you're doing 17 minutes, you didn't do a minute longer. You did 17 minutes or you got your ass chewed out. And they really sat there and they had a stopwatch, and they made sure they were all over that time, because they knew that when the show starts on time and the comics go on time, the show can end on time, and that's what people can count on. People want patterns. They want repeatability. They want to know when they're going to be in and when they're going to be out, and that's what keeps people coming back to a place, is the routine. And they understood that more than anybody I've ever met. And they took care of the comics. Okay, on Fridays and Saturday nights, they'd order food for all the comics, and they'd order a shitload of lunch meat or you know, Italian beef sandwiches or pizza, and they always had something in the back and told the comics to help themselves, and they always took care of you and fed you. On Thursday nights after the show, JD would always take the comics out to this Italian restaurant that I can't remember the name for the life of me, but it was such a great place. And the place was essentially closed when we would show up, and JD had a good relationship there, so they'd keep the place open, and JD would treat us all to a nice Italian meal, get to know us as comics, you know, have a bunch of laughs after the show, It's one thing to make people laugh on stage. When you can have laughs as real people and laugh with each other and you don't have to be the star, that's what's awesome. And that was what was really cool. You really got to appreciate those Thursday nights, especially after you overcame your fear of being there the first few times and you could really start to open up around this crew. And the last piece that made this so successful, they didn't fuck around in the crowd. If somebody was heckling, they had big fucking doormen there. They were just intimidating, and they'd walk right over your table, they'd shut you up immediately, and if you didn't shut up, you were out, and they got you out of that room fast. And there was a lot of horror stories about what would happen to some hecklers, which is where the name of this podcast starts to kick in. So let's talk about it. In October of 2005, I got my audition at this place, and it was the night that the White Sox won the World Series. And Jim Flanagan and I both got our auditions on that night. And Jim's a huge White Sox fan. So that shows you how important this place was that we skipped the World Series to go do this quick 5-minute audition. And we show up, and there's 4 audience members there, and there's 3 of us comics that are there. And so now our 5-minute auditions turned into probably 15 to 20 minute auditions each, because they had to have us, you know, fill up the time of the show. And because there was 4 people there, I can't remember if we got the option of whether we wanted to do the show or not, but I know we did it. And for 4 people there, we had a good set, you know, as good a set as you can have being a few years in and having 4 people in the crowd. But there was a gentleman in the audience, a fan of comedy named Rob, and I'll omit his last name, but his name's Rob. And he was there that night and just happened to see Jim and myself. And to this day, if Jim or I go to Milwaukee, Rob shows up to these shows. And he always talks about, man, anytime somebody tells a horror story of me on Facebook or something, Rob is right there to say, I watched Vince come to Milwaukee in front of 4 people and fucking destroy the room. And it's super cool. It's one of my first true fans of comedy. So Rob, thanks for that. But we did the show, and then after the show, I remember JD came up to us and he said, because the 3 of you came here and you did this, doesn't even matter what you did on stage, I'm going to give you a booking here because you showed up and did this for 4 people. And so that's a lesson to some of the younger comics out there. Always put your back into it. I made a fan that night and I got booked into a club that night. And those are things that don't happen if you sit there and judge the night and quit before you start. Well, getting booked at this club was awesome. It was a great feeling and accomplishment. But the way this club booked was very unique. So most clubs have an MC, a feature, and a headliner. So an opener, a middle, and a closer. And the way this club did it is they had an MC, then they had an opener, a feature, and a headliner. So there was 4 spots on the bill. But most clubs, when you MC, you warm up the crowd. Hey, any birthdays here? Anybody celebrating anything? These are the rules of the club. And then you tell about 10 minutes of jokes to get the audience used to stand-up comedy so you can make that transition over to the feature. The way this club did it, the MC went up there, did the announcements, and that was it. Then you would introduce the rest of the show. I don't want to say it was a hazing as much as it was more of earning your stripes. They wanted to see how you control the room. As an MC, do you have what it takes on stage? Can you quiet people down? Can you make the show not about you and carry the show forward how it's supposed to be? Can you keep a show moving? Can you stay on time with the time limits they give you? Can you follow the directions they give you? It was very much a test. And you'd go in and it paid $25 a show and you'd do 6 shows, 1 Thursday, 2 Friday, 3 Saturday. And so you get $150 for the weekend. You don't get anywhere to stay. You're commuting there from Chicago every night. You know, an 80-mile drive there and back every single night, and you were the last one there. So on Saturdays, when you did 3 shows, you didn't get out of there till 1 something in the morning, because you had to wait and get paid. So it was usually around 1:30 on Saturdays when you finally got paid and were able to drive home. And for as cool as it was to be at this club, it sucked so bad to be in that spot. And it only sucked because you wanted to be a part of that show. You would watch the opener, feature, and headliner go up and just absolutely murder 6 sold-out shows in front of some of the best audiences I've ever seen. And I remember just being there that first time and just introducing everybody, just chomping at the bit like, fuck, man, that's all I want to do is just be out there tearing it up. And the weekend was over, and you know, and I did good as far as, you know, I did my job. And I remember I left, and I was telling my parents, you know, hey, they asked how it was. I'm like, hey, this is a story. If I get the opportunity to go back, if I don't get booked as the opening comic, I'm not doing the announcements again. I did it once. I proved myself. I'm not going to do it again. 2 weeks after, I got a phone call from the booker, and the booker said, hey, Vince, we had a fallout of our announcer for the weekend. Can you go back up and do the announcements again in Milwaukee this weekend? And I said, yep, I'll be there. And I went against everything that I said because I'm a whore to comedy. And I went right back. And I figured also going twice in succession, my face being around that much, if I can go back and have another good showing, I should be able to move past this pretty quick. And so I went back there in early June of 2006. And I went up there and I had a good showing actually, because in the announcements, somebody heckled me, and I laid them out. I leveled them, and the place went nuts, and that gained the respect of JD and the rest of his crew there. And after, I remember it was the last show on Saturday. JD said, Vince, when you're done with the announcements, do 2 minutes of jokes. And he gave me that trial to do 2 minutes of jokes. I had a bunch of laughs in those 2 minutes, and I got my pass. I got to become the opener there. But let me backpedal a little bit. So in May of 2006, this was my first time there, and this was my first time driving there. Back when I auditioned, my buddy drove, so I didn't have to pay attention. So in 2006, GPSs weren't the rage, so everybody used MapQuest. So you'd print out directions, and they were just static. Whatever you printed, that's what it was. And you know, if you got lost, there was no rerouting. You just had to fucking figure it out. Well, Milwaukee has been notorious for being under construction. And right around 2006, I think they were in year four of a 7-year construction rebuild. And that's not a joke. And I got massively lost on the way to the club. Well, all the horror stories that you hear about this club is that this club is owned by these big burly guys that have beat the shit out of comics before, that have mouthed off to them and, you know, tied a comic to a telephone pole and taped them to a telephone pole and beat the shit out of them. How they've dragged hecklers out back and pounded their face into the asphalt. And you hear all these stories, and when you're 23 or 24, what I was back then, you don't know you know, what's fact or fiction. You don't know what's folklore and what's real. And so you know, you have no choice but to kind of believe these stories. So as I'm supposed to be there at a 7 o'clock call time for an 8 o'clock show on that first Thursday, I was supposed to be there, and I got lost. And I'm over by the lake, which this club is nowhere near the lake, and I don't know where the fuck I am. And I'm calling the club, and they're trying to give me directions, and I'm calling home and trying to have my dad route me on the way. And it's like 7:10, 7:20, 7:30, 7:40, and it gets to be like 7:52 when I finally pull up to the club. And I had already had thoughts of just calling it a night, saying, hey guys, I can't make it, and just never showing my face there because I was so scared to show up and get an ass reaming for showing up late when I missed the call time my very first time there. It just, I thought it was like poor etiquette. It's like showing up late for a job interview. You're better off just not showing up and acting like, oh, I thought you canceled, you know? But I showed up so nervous, so apologetic. And I walk in, and it's me, JD, the owner, and a gentleman named Dave Odd, who's another comedian. And Dave Odd had curly hair, and that's important. I'm not just giving you a description of him. When JD walked up to us, Dave had already been there, and he was there on time. And he's like, hey, nice to meet you, I'm JD. And I'm like, hey, I'm Vince Carone. He's like, Carone, Italian? And I said, yeah. And he goes, hey, man, pleasure to meet you. And he got real nice and, you know, gregarious. And he turns and he looks at Dave Odd. He goes, get in that bathroom, fix your hair, and don't ever come to my club looking like shit like that again. And Dave Odd had like a Jew fro. Like, that's his hair. He wasn't messed up. And I just remember Dave like giving him a look, and Dave went in the bathroom and like came out like 2 minutes later with his hair the exact same way, just looking a little wet. And there's just nothing he can do. But I got to see the intimidation firsthand. I'm not saying it was right. I got to see it firsthand that day, and I was Italian, so I fit in. That was my first time there. And then the second time there, I got the pass. And that led to me moving up the ranks very, very quickly there. in August, 2 months later, I got to be the opener. And then by October, I was the co-feature. I was splitting the feature spot. And it was one of the first clubs to ever take a chance on me. And but I remember like trying to break in with these guys. And I'd go on stage, and if you know me on stage, I have a very aggressive personality on stage. I'm a ranter, and then you listen to me on this podcast, I'm a little more calm. And people always are like, Vince, you off stage, you're very different than you are on stage. And it's like, well, could you imagine if I acted the way I off stage as I do on stage? I'd have no fucking friends. Are you kidding me? I weigh 165 pounds. I'd be getting the shit kicked out of me every day if I talk like that in my everyday life. And then people are like, well, is it an act? No, it's not an act. My onstage personality is who I am on the inside. These are the thoughts I have, and this is what I feel. But in day-to-day life, I'm a respectful, polite, kind person. I'm not a ranting lunatic everywhere I walk to. So I'm trying to like fit in with these guys, but they're very standoffish and intimidating. But because the way I carried myself on stage and the way I'd handle myself, like they never had to kick any hecklers out for me because I always handled them on my own. When you listen to the intro clip of this podcast, when you hear me say, "Shouldn't you guys be the exhibits at a pro-choice rally?" That stemmed from one of the shows early on at the Comedy Cafe, and they respected that from me. And I got to move up the ranks very, very quickly with them. And they actually, when I was back there and I was in the opening spot in August of 2006, the headliner wasn't somebody who was fluent on the radio. He wasn't good at doing radio spots. So they asked me, Vince, would you do the radio? And it was my first time ever. I was 23 years old and I did the radio. And I have a clip of that show and I'll play you what I sounded like my first time on the radio.
You're from Chicago.
Yep, absolutely. Northwest suburb of Chicago.
But you've been to Milwaukee a few times. A
couple times, yeah. Okay. A couple times this year alone, yeah.
Oh, give me your impression of Milwaukee.
I think it's great. I love the city. I talk to everybody, and they say it's one of the greatest cities they've been to. They say once you come to Milwaukee, you never want to leave. And I realize that's because you guys close every ramp there is to get back to Chicago from here. Drive around for hours at D2 where the bridge is closed. But you can still get to the casino just fine, no matter which route you take. Yeah.
We have made it a little tough for people to come in and out of the cities.
Yeah, so you can probably hear like the nerves in my voice. I didn't really know what I was doing on there. I knew you had to kind of write some sound bites for it that they would play along with it, but I didn't really know what I was doing. But it was my first time on the radio, and I did it many, many more times after that from there, and I appreciate the Comedy Cafe giving me that first time. Let's take a quick word from our sponsor, and we'll be back to talk about a couple of the other highlights from this club. So after I co-featured, I was well on my way. I had a good rapport with this club, and I moved from feature to headliner very, very quickly. They were the first actual comedy club to give me a headlining weekend, and it happened very, very fast. They started me out with co-headlining. I co-headlined with a comedian named Robert Hines, who's from Chicago but lives in Los Angeles now. And Robert was already a headliner, and him and I were co-headlining, and he would go first and I would go second, which was the wrong order of the show, especially at that time. Robert was the veteran back then, and I should have been going first because the first night he buried me on stage, meaning like he did awesome and it was very, very tough to follow, and I struggled a little bit. But then the second and third night is when I caught fire and I started learning how to actually start formulating a headlining show. It's one thing to go up on stage and do 45 minutes to an hour. It's another thing to know how to carry a set for 45 minutes to an hour to get it from start to finish and have it be a story versus just random bits all chopped in there. And I started learning that thanks to this club. I remember one of the times there, there was an awesome guy there named Duke. And Duke and I got along so well. Duke is, he's probably in his 50s or 60s now, I'd have to imagine. But he's probably in his late 40s, early 50s at this time. And Duke was just a brick shit house, man. Just huge muscles, suit and tie, big built fucking dude. At the end of the weekend, he'd always take off his dress shirt. He'd have a Dago tee on under it. And it's just huge arms and shit. And all these guys, that's all they did was just work out and beat the shit out of hecklers. Or at least that was the perception. But they were such good guys. And Duke and I always got along. And there was a great sandwich place across the street. And I brought back an Italian sub and I was eating it. And I had about half of it left. And Duke looks at me and he's like, Vince, it'd sure be nice of you to save me a little bit of that sandwich. I just handed the sandwich right over to him and no qualms about it. Just just took a bite out of right where I was biting and just finished that sandwich on me. And it was one of those things. Was I intimidated? Of course I was. Was it hilarious? Of course it was. And I'll never forget that. And it was just representative of that time, man. Just the respect for those around you. And it felt like working Vegas back in the mob days. You know what I mean? If you were in, you were in, but you still showed that respect. And I was in, but still had that respect level for them. But I started headlining. And as I headlined, I got to do radio more there. So I'll play another quick radio clip to show you a little bit of the progression or non-progression of what happened when I was on the radio. Here you go.
You see all those really cool signs. Have you seen them? Like the University of Lausonomy, there's one there. And the Bong Recreation Area.
My favorite signs coming here, because I know you guys like to drink out in this town, was every 10 feet when I crossed the Wisconsin border, there was a crash investigation site sign on the road.
Oh, yeah.
And then right above that, it said, it was beautiful, it said park and ride. So you drink, you drive, you plow your car, you get out, you hop on the bus and go right to the next bar. It's down to a science out in this area.
So when I did that radio clip, I was getting ready to record my second album, which is called Thanks for the Clap. And JD's Comedy Cafe was awesome enough to let me record that in August of 2009. So when I went out there, I had sold out shows, and it was a great time. And I remember I had Jim Flanagan opening for me on Thursday, and then Ken Gar opening for me on Friday and Saturday. And I recorded, I think, 5 or 6 shows throughout the weekend and kind of stitched them all together and took the best pieces of them. And I'll talk about this album in full on a podcast one day, but they were great crowds and I had great responses. But the guys doing my recording didn't really know what they were doing. They never really recorded live comedy before, and they couldn't get the editing right to where you could hear me clearly and hear the audience clearly. And so when you listen to that album of mine, it sounds like I recorded it in a studio with very, very faint laughter in the background. And I've gotten feedback over the years like, hey, Vince, next time you should mix it to where you can hear the crowd laugh more. And it's like, yeah, I know that, dipshits, but that's not how it worked. And that's what I was stuck with. That's what I recorded. And that's what it is. But it's a piece of history. And that's what it is for me. So here's a clip of that weekend, August of 2009, when I recorded Thanks for the Clap at the Comedy Cafe.
When I was 15 years old, my dad exploded at the kid behind the McDonald's counter for forgetting to put the pickle on our sandwich. And when you're 15, you don't grasp that your dad is just a pickle. How could that ruin your entire day? When does life get that serious that a pickle ruins your entire day? And he said, you'll understand one day. And I was like, but dad, it's just, he said, you'll see one day. And that's all he told me. And then I started dating and I started listening to women. And it dawned on me, it had nothing to do with the pickle, McDonald's, lunch, the kid, restaurant, nothing to do with that whole scenario. It was everything to do with the fact that my mom was standing right next to him in line that day, yapping in his ear about shit they had to do for the rest of the year. She had a plan and he wasn't with it, and she just rode him to town. She just kept going, we gotta take the kids here after lunch, we gotta go stop by your mom's, we gotta go to the bank, I gotta go pick up some money, we gotta go to the store, we gotta get bread, we gotta get milk, we gotta sign the kids up for school. Are you coaching baseball again this year? Christmas is coming up, what do you want to get the kids? Where should we go? Should we go on vacation again this year? Do you want to go? And finally he snaps like, give me the fucking pickle! Where's this fucking pickle? I want the fucking pickle!
So the Comedy Cafe changed ownership. JD sold the club. And when he did, a lot of the guys that worked for him kind of went with him, and a couple of them stayed on. A couple of good guys, Chris and Eric, and a couple of these guys that I've known for years and years, and Howard, I believe, was there, and all good guys. And I saw them for a few times over the years. But when JD left, the club really kind of took a nosedive in terms of what it was. It was no longer that reminiscent era of JD's Comedy Cafe. Whoever took it over stopped doing the busing from Victor's there, so that immediately caused a huge barrier. They stopped doing the radio. I believe they stopped doing radio, or they shifted how they were doing it, and they shifted the condo where you would stay. They shifted all the advertising. They shifted some of the staff, which meant that some of the protocol of being stringent with time, busing them in, taking care of the comics and feeding them, you know, getting hecklers out immediately, going out to dinner after the show on Thursdays. A lot of those things that built the camaraderie and built the trust and built the fun and excitement of what that place was started going away. And while the crowds were still good, they were no longer as plentiful. And Milwaukee and Wisconsin just always have amazing crowds wherever you go. But it wasn't the same. The club started fizzling out. And then Eric, who worked there, Eric took over the club, and he ran it for a while in another location. And Eric was always a great guy from day one. Eric was a good guy to me. We always got along, and I hadn't seen him in probably 4 or 5 years. And so the last time I got to do the Comedy Cafe was back in June of 2016, and Eric and I were just laughing about all the old days, catching up on stuff that we just hadn't talked about in years. And it was still they packed the room out in this new location, and the audiences were just as hot as they've ever been, and fucking just so much fun. And then I got word that the Comedy Cafe just closed, and I don't know why. I don't know what happened. And I know there was talks of reopening it, and that just hasn't happened in a few years now. And it's just such a shame, because it was such an awesome staple of the Milwaukee comedy scene. And it was just such awesome, fun crowds. And for me, it holds a special place in my heart, because they were the first true club to take a chance on me. And because of being able to use their name, that got me into the Skyline Comedy Cafe, which got me into doing the Negaunee, Michigan, Sheboygan Falls runs that I talk about a lot on this podcast, which got me into a lot of different clubs by being able to say, yeah, I work these clubs, I headline these, check in with JD for a reference for me, and it got me into a lot of other places, so I'll never forget them for that. So JD, Eric, Howard, Chris, Duke, all you guys, it was always so much fun. Thank you so much for believing in me at a young age. And, when I ran into, Duke, back in 2016, he showed up to watch the show, and he heard I was going to be there for the weekend, and he had really like slimmed out. And I was like, Duke, like, look at you, man. You lost some weight. You're looking good. I'm like, what have you been doing? And he goes, cancer. And, I'm like, oh, okay. And then he laughed, and we both had a laugh, and he just, never stops busting balls. But, he had a really rough bout with cancer, and he beat it, and he overcame it. And last I heard, he was on the right track. I haven't talked to him in a couple of years now. But all my love to him. I hope he's doing okay. And the Milwaukee comedy scene is still booming today because of the local comedy scene out there. Just created so many awesome opportunities. But happy to say there's a new comedy club coming back. The Improv. An Improv is opening up in Milwaukee this next summer of 2020. And so that should be exciting. Looking forward to trying to get booked there and starting the process all over of keeping my name going around Milwaukee again. What's coming up for me? You all know that by now, December 12th, next week, Zany's Rosemont is my album recording of Vincectomy. I'll be recording a podcast the night before to release that Thursday morning. So you'll get to hear next week just kind of like what I'm going through mentally before I record this. But this Friday, I'm in Boynton Ridge at a place called Ashbury's performing. And then Saturday, I'm in Love's Park at a place called The Hope and Anchor. I was there about a year and a half ago, and it's such an awesome, awesome show by a guy named Jared Corey. And it's going to be a lot of fun. And so next week's the big show. And I'll give you just a couple insights into how I feel about the recording next week. But next week's podcast, what I'm going to talk about is the time I got to perform for the staff of the Chicago Blackhawks. And it's a real fun story that came about by accident. You'll want to hear it. I'll give you some insights into behind the scenes of what I uncovered, what I discovered. So that's it for this week. Remember, subscribe to my YouTube channel, like my Facebook page, and follow me on Instagram and Twitter, all forms of social media, at Vince Carone. Check out videos, check out my rants and my website. My website is www.vincecarone.com, and you're getting here an ad now for my album recording, but just so I could tell you directly, get on out, make sure you see the show, get a babysitter, get on out to dinner, make it a date night, you'll be in bed early, the show will be over by 9:40, you can get out early, get to bed early, but you get to be a part of something real special for me.